You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The most recent book by Pulitzer Prize-winning war reporter Paul Watson has little to do with war. It's about the doomed 1848 Franklin expedition into the Arctic. The expedition consisted of two ships, the Erebus and the Terror, and they were looking for the Northwest Passage, a potential trade route between Asia and Europe. The ships never returned, and that set off a roughly 170-year search to discover their remains. Paul Watson joins us now to discuss his book, Ice Ghost, The Epic Hunt for the Lost Franklin Expedition, published by W.W. Norton. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
John Franklin was selected to lead this expedition. Why him?
He had done three previous expeditions, one of which he almost died on because he nearly starved to death. He became known as the man who ate his boots because he literally had to eat his shoe leather to stay alive to walk out. But by the time that this expedition was ready to go in 1845, he was quite old. He was 59, almost 60. People thought he was too old, but he essentially lobbied to get it.
And there was resistance by the British Admiralty to putting him in charge.
That's right. They had a list of people they preferred to go. They either didn't want to go or the experts thought one of them was too young, so they came down to Franklin.
Wasn't he motivated partially because his reputation had been somewhat tarnished when he was acting as governor of what was Tasmania?
That's right. Franklin was one of those people who knew how to survive in the elements and knew how to survive in war, but he couldn't handle politics, and he got stabbed in the back politically while governor of this little colony. And his wife, Jane Franklin, lobbied hard and was determined to rehabilitate his image.
So she pushed him into this to some degree. After his disappearance, how did that affect Jane Franklin? Did she feel guilty?
You know, I'm a journalist and not a historian, so I'm allowed to speculate. And in Ice Ghosts, I portray her as a character who's motivated both by a very deep love, which is very clear in her writing. She wrote voluminous journals and letters. That comes through clearly. I think she also was motivated in part by guilt.
What about the names of these ships? Didn't they both set a bad omen? The Terror, and what does Erebus mean?
Erebus is the name for the gateway to hell, and Terror is terror, named so because they're warships. And interestingly enough, the Terror, when you sing the national anthem, bombs bursting in air, some of those bombs were fired from the Terror's decks at Fort McHenry at Baltimore when Francis Scott Key was witnessing it, and he wrote the poem that became the national anthem.
But that was years before.
That's right.
1812. Weren't the ships considered technologically advanced for their time?
They were. Now, the Royal Navy, when they decided to go back to Arctic exploration, had to do it in a hurry. They did this because the war against Napoleon had ended in 1815. They had 3 years to get ready to go back in 1818 to Arctic exploration. So they had to adapt ships that existed.
And why did they want to explore the Arctic other than finding a Northwest Passage?
One of the primary reasons was they needed a peacetime mission. The politicians were cutting their budgets, so they needed something to do. They also feared that if they didn't find the passage, the Russians would. So they took train engines and planted them in each ship to give them steam-powered propellers, hoping that if they ran into trouble in the ice, that could get them through.
They were just 170 years too early. There is now a Northwest Passage, isn't there?
There is. It's very treacherous.
Because climate change has created one?
Right. It's very dangerous, though, and it's a very limited number of ships make the transit each year. It's a little more than a dozen, and most of those are sailboats.
So the trade factor never really is unnecessary today.
Right.
The Panama Canal and other things have made that unnecessary.
That's right. As shipping experts point out to me, you can cut a significant amount of time off, but you have significantly higher costs. Insurance companies don't like it, so they make you pay for it. Plus, they have very bad storms up there.
The expedition had 129 crew members, one dog, one cat, and a monkey?
And a monkey.
Why a monkey?
Lady Franklin gave it as a gift to the sailors aboard the flagship, her husband's ship, HMS Erebus, And there's a great description in a letter sent home before they disappear about the sailors dressing up the monkey named Jacko, who was a female monkey, in a dress.
Now, did they have any sense of their route?
They did, because Franklin knew the western exit. He'd seen it himself. The eastern entrance was very well known. Really, all they had to do was to find roughly 300 miles in the middle.
And they saw themselves as being on a scientific mission as well?
That's right. They were making magnetic observations and observations of the environment, the biology. But there's a problem here. The science of the time was convinced that the sea at the top of the world was what they called an open polar sea, an almost a paradise of warm water. And if you could find your way through the ice, you'd come to this beautiful open sea that's warm and just sail across the top of the world.
What led them to think that?
Well, it's odd. There's a few things.
They could work now in the Trump administration.
That's right. One of the reasons is that they believed that the sun was closer to the North Pole, and therefore it would be warmer. They also saw migrations of animals and thought, well, they're heading north, and if animals go north, it must be warm up there.
What do we know about when the ships got stuck in the ice? What happened?
The ships were abandoned in the spring of 1848. At that time, they had 129 men when they went into the Arctic archipelago. They had 105 at that point. We know because they left a note behind.
And Franklin was one of the ones who died?
He died early, and there were other men. Franklin, we don't know where his body is, but there are others buried on Beachy Island, and we know where they are. But then the 105, their remains have been found, but not identified. And most of them just disappeared.
Do we know what killed Franklin?
We don't, and that's a great mystery.
But he had survived on shoe leather, and he couldn't survive up there.
That's right. He's 60 years old. He was he was a large man. Before he went, in the interview where he tried to convince the boss, essentially, let me go, the boss said to him, I understand from others that you're susceptible to the cold. And Franklin took that personally and said, no, that's not true. I can take the cold.
Aren't there theories that the men reboarded the ship after they had gotten stuck?
There are. And experts, archaeologists, historians are going to have to figure this out. But with the discovery of the two wrecks in Ice Ghosts, there's a wonderful map where you can see that they form almost a straight line, three sites, the sites where they were abandoned in 1848, and the two sites where they were discovered in 2014, and the second just last fall in 2016. It's almost a perfectly straight line.
And why has it taken so long? Because the ice is melting and now revealing the ships?
That's part of it. It makes it easier to navigate. But also, the Inuit who have been up there since forever, they knew where at least one of the ships was and had been telling people since way back in the 19th century. But because of racism and sort of imperial arrogance, people weren't listening to them.
I'm speaking with Paul Watson, whose latest book is Ice Ghosts, The Epic Hunt for the Lost Franklin Expedition. And there was a lot of racism. Charles Dickens weighed in and tried to discredit the Inuit.
Right. Now, when a report came back from John Ray, who was the first to find the evidence of cannibalism, experts today call this survival cannibalism. I think we can understand if you're dying and your comrades have died before you, the temptation would be to try to sustain yourself with their bodies. The Inuit described this to Ray. He had other evidence. When he came back and reported that, Charles Dickens wrote a two-part screed, is the best way to describe it, in which he said, these were good Christian men. These are sailors of the Royal Navy. How could anyone suggest they would eat one another?
You write that prejudice toward indigenous people helped doom the Franklin expedition.
Exactly, for a number of reasons, because, naturally, if you want to find a waterway through the Arctic, who would you ask first? The Inuit had no need to travel all the way across the Arctic by sea. They did it by dog sled. But you could ask them, I think, if we go in that direction, as they did, in fact, we have records of this, if I need to go in that direction, how would I do that?
But you say that the oral history of the Inuit has been disregarded even in modern times.
Exactly. There are modern maps which an icebreaker captain, one of which referred to, he showed it to me, in which it says Inuit testimony, Inuit information should be disregarded.
When did the people back in Britain start to get nervous about what had happened? When did Lady Franklin begin expressing concern?
Lady Franklin had a feeling early on, I guess from instinct, but it became sort of a spiritual matter after that. She was a very brilliant woman, a very determined woman, and so she tried anything she could. One was to communicate with spirits. Through those communications, she got a sense that they were in trouble.
That included getting advice from the spirit of a toddler.
That's right.
And the toddler actually revealed a previously unseen channel in a map?
That's right. This is Wheezy's ghost, the ghost of a little girl named Louisa. I don't want to give it away because it's a good ghost story, and I haven't heard an explanation that destroys the story yet. If your listeners have one, I would love to hear it.
Now, she also sponsored a number of expeditions to find the lost ships. Did they face any problems?
They did. Now, this is really why she's extraordinary in the modern sense, because the Royal Navy had officially given up searching in 1856. By this point, they were at war. The war was just ending over Crimea. Crimea's in the news again, so a lot of this story was important in the 19th century, again important today. She was determined to have one more search. So she almost spent the last of her fortune. She raised money even from children, sent an expedition, and it was that 1859 expedition which found the very note which explained what had happened.
What role did Louis Kamakak play in the hunt for the Erebus and the Terror?
He's an Inuk man, was born on the tundra in a tent. His great-grandmother told him a story which stuck in his mind. Her story was about being a little girl with her father and finding artifacts on the ground, which seemed like, by Louis's description, probably a butter knife and probably the shot from a shotgun. Having heard that story, he made it his life's mission to try to find the Franklin ships. He believes, I'm fascinated by this possibility, he believes that Franklin is buried up there and is still trying to find him.
And several white men were called long strides by the Inuit because they took longer strides than Inuit might take?
That's right. Their word for it was agluka. And, you know, historians debate this, but it seems that it's likely that the second in command, when Franklin died, command of the expedition went to a man named Crozier. And historians think that agluka is probably Crozier.
Inuit pointed researchers in 2016 to find the Terror. How close were the discoveries of Erebus and Terror to where the Inuit said they were?
Erebus, found in 2014, was exactly in the general vicinity of where they had always said it was since the 19th century. That's in the eastern Queen Maud Gulf, not far from the top of the continent where they hoped to escape by land. The Terror was found in, oddly enough, Terror Bay.
In 2014, you joined the expedition that discovered the Erebus. What was the mood like before it was discovered?
That expedition was one of a series that began in 2008, so there was a lot of pressure, political pressure, because money was being spent and shipwrecks were not being found, and people thought, you know, isn't this a waste of money and time? So when they actually found a wreck, there was pure elation.
You write that this was the biggest, costliest search in maritime history. Why do you think people became so obsessed with finding these ships and learning the story?
Right. I mean, there are several elements. I'll give you three. One is the Arctic. It's just a mysterious place, even today, to many people. The other is...
Well, right now, people see it as a place to drill for oil.
Sure, but it's also, I'd forgotten this, but the novel Frankenstein, I urge people to go back and reread it. It starts in the Arctic. And Mary Shelley, we're told, literary historians have shown this, that she had the writings of one Sir John Barrow on her shelf which she shared with the poet Percy Shelley, she was aware of this argument, we must go back to polar exploration. We know that Frankenstein is about scientific overreach in part. She was warning, it seems, you know, we better be careful about returning to the Arctic because it is a unique place. And the message I tried to bring today in Ice Ghosts is the Arctic is a place that teaches us you must respect the environment. You cannot survive in the Arctic unless you respect it.
Isn't this a rather unusual book for you? You worked as a war reporter for over 20 years, covering conflicts in Angola, the Balkans, Eritrea, Rwanda, Afghanistan, Iraq, Somalia. Wrote a number of books based on those experiences. Won a Pulitzer Prize, and now something totally different.
Right. Here's the connection. I think anyone who has seen war as much as I have will tell you the same thing. You come to believe in ghosts, in forces you can't see. You see enough people killed, you get that sense. As I began to explore the search for the Franklin expedition, ghosts became an important part of that story. And you'll see in the story that they are central to it. Not only Lady Franklin and not only Wheezy's ghosts, but the Inuit. They believe in a whole unseen spiritual world up there, which is critical to how they survive and how they manage their lives.
Is the fact that you live in Canada also a factor in your interest in the story?
Well, you know, oddly enough, as a good Canadian child, of course, I learned the Franklin story. It's one of our national myths. But that made me completely uninterested in it. I didn't really care about Franklin until I started to dig into it, and then it gets into your blood.
Paul Watson's book is Ice Ghosts, The Epic Hunt for the Lost Franklin Expedition, published by Norton. Thank you so much for being on our show.